Hey, Sean. Hey, Laurel.
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
So what are you thinking we're going to talk about this week?
Oh, my gosh. Where do we start? So there was this new tax cut that was introduced today.
Yeah, there's a bunch of juvenile justice stuff, a bunch of crime bills.
There are more agriculture bills all the time. There are these tax credits. There's these livestock siting bills.
There's that big DNC bar bill.
Honestly, there's a lot. It's kind of hard to keep up.
Huh, it does sound like a lot, but isn't the legislature always kind of up to something?
John, this is end of session madness here right now. Okay, let me give you an example. On Tuesday, there were 11 committee hearings.
And on Wednesday, there were 20.
And on Thursday, there were 24. How do you write like you're running out of time? Write day and night like you're running out of time.
Every day you fight like you're running out of time. Huh. I guess it sounds like there is a lot to talk about. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, the Wisconsin legislature is nonstop. Why do you write like you're running out of time? Write day and night like you're running out of time. Every day you fight like you're running out of time. Keep on fighting in the meantime. Nonstop. So that song there and our whole intro was obviously based off of the song Nonstop from the hit Broadway musical Hamilton. For anyone who hasn't seen it.
And that list would include John K. Wilson. It used to include me, and I recently saw Hamilton, and I gotta say, Laurel White has been trying to get us to use a Hamilton song in this podcast for so long, and we almost used it last week while you were gone.
No.
But guilt overcame us, like, no, we gotta wait for Laurel to get back for this. So here we are.
I just have to say, it's about dang time.
Yeah. And there's so many more song options that we can use.
This is just the beginning of the Hamilton era of our podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
No, this is going to be the only one.
No.
At least until I see it and then get really obsessed with it like everybody
sometime
else.
Sometime in 2022 when John sees it or after the movie comes out.
When I finally see, like, I don't know where I'm going to see it. It's already come to Madison. It's already come to Chicago. I'm going to have to, like, go to Cincinnati or something to see the traveling performance of it.
Do it. Travel. It's worth it. And then we can do a podcast about private caucuses and talk about the room where it happens. So,
which I've pitched like 12 times.
Laurel has actually I've stolen from Laurel. Yes.
Anyway,
but I'm into it now.
Anyway, sure. Why don't we act like we're podcasting, like we're running out of time, because we do have a lot of stuff to get to this week.
Sure do. End of session. It really is busy. 24 is a lot of hearings.
Yes.
It's not the largest number of committee hearings I've ever seen, for sure. But it is kind of impossible to cover everything when there's 24. These are executive sessions and public hearings, just all mixed up. If you do happen to be in the legislature for one of these things on a week like this, you will see lawmakers entering, leaving, madness.
They've got a lot of places to be all at the same time. They need like a Hermione Granger time turner sort of situation from Harry Potter.
So for the
small Venn diagram of people who have not seen Hamilton or read the Harry Potter books.
We've lost them all.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Okay, so let's talk about first. They are running out of time in the legislature because they have said they are running out of time, right? Mm-hmm. They have kind of a self-imposed, not kind of, they have a self-imposed adjournment date in the assembly of February 20th. The assembly speaker has said, we're going to have all our stuff done by then.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that you want to get done, legislator, you have to get it done. So one of the things that you just covered, Laurel, was this tax cut bill that GOP lawmakers have been talking about for a while.
Mm-hmm.
We now have the details of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
So this is a plan that would do three things. It would lower income taxes by changing the standard deduction for filers. It would cut personal property taxes for some businesses in Wisconsin by making it so they don't have to count some of their machinery toward their personal property assets and be taxed on them. And then it would also put about $100 million toward paying down some of Wisconsin's debt.
And so just to clarify, this has something to do with what we've talked about in the past on the podcast about how there's this extra projected revenue that the state is taking in on taxes, and this is the plan that Republican lawmakers are coming out and saying, this is how we want to spend some of that projected extra money by giving more tax cuts.
Yeah, this has sort of happened in phases. So at the end of last year, we were expecting this memo to come out with possible, increased revenue. So Republican lawmakers at that time were saying, if this happens, we probably want to do a tax cut, maybe a property tax cut. And then, the next phase of it was the actual projections coming out. They were about $820 million or so over what was projected, right, Sean?
818.
Yep. And then, to be precise,
I just bookmarked that number in my brain. It'll fall out pretty soon, though.
Yeah. Well, it's there for now. That's good. Mm-hmm. And then the governor came out and said what he wanted to do with that money, which was spend some money on education.
He did. His big call was a $250 million special session on education, on school funding. That's what he wanted to do with the money.
And now Republicans have come out with in the last phase of this, before, it actually moves through the legislative process, is Republicans saying what they want to do with it, which is income tax cuts, property tax cut, and then this payment on debt.
So that's sort of what it would cost the state, though. What sort of tax cut are we looking at for people in Wisconsin? What would this look like?
So in Wisconsin, people would save an average of $105 a year from this tax cut.
But so this is a Republican plan. The governor, like we just said, has his own plan about how he wants to spend the money. This is moving through the legislature. They're pushing it through like they're running out of time. Do we have any sense about what the governor's stance is on this tax cut proposal?
Okay, so about the governor's plan, Republicans have basically already said that's not happening. They're not going to take up his bill. And he hasn't come out as forcefully on their plan and said, I'm going to veto this or anything like that.
As of recording on Friday afternoon.
As of this recording, he has not come out and said, I'm going to veto this. But he didn't say, hey, good idea. Good idea, people.
He didn't say that he's not going to veto it. Right?
Is that how you he didn't say anything.
Really. Yeah. His office released a statement that was critical of the plan.
Yeah. And he, again, reminded people, you guys used to be talking like you were in favor of 2/3 school funding, which my plan would do, bring the state back to paying for 2/3 the cost of education. So that's where he's at. It doesn't seem I could imagine a scenario, as we kind of talked about before, where they don't agree to his plan, he doesn't agree to their plan, and this giant pot of money that is projected to come to the state government just kind of sits there and waits for the next budget. But we'll see.
All right, what's next?
Well, I think here's a topic that is a good example of how things just move faster at the end of session. There were a bunch of agriculture bills that were brought up this week. We knew that Assembly Republicans were going to bring out their own agriculture bills after the governor called a special session on ag. They did, and they held hearings and moved these things through pretty quick. They also, for the first time this week, unveiled this big bill that would affect the rules for siting large livestock farms. Mm-hmm. So the state has these rules that local units of governments can adopt, these livestock siting rules. They were enacted back in 2006. And essentially what this bill would do, a couple things. One, it would say that instead of local governments like towns being in charge of overseeing these siting rules for CAFOs, they would be handled by the State Department of Agriculture. And additionally, they would create this new panel that would oversee future rule changes to the livestock siting rules. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, I'm still with you.
Stay with me here. I sat through this hearing and read this bill and listened and what does this do? What does this do? And I really think it boils to, for me, the big change boils down to this, that in the future, you remember there was all that controversy when former Ag Secretary Brad Paff, before he was fired by the Senate, he was looking into making changes to the rules regarding livestock siting. Republicans didn't like it. And so this new proposal that they have out would create this oversight board, basically, and it would have veto authority when the Department of Ag writes rules about livestock siting. So this new 9-member board would be packed with 5 members that are picked from farm groups. Okay, so they would have a huge amount of influence over the next round of rules on this stuff. And farm groups have said, look, yeah, we want that because we didn't have enough say in the last go round. But this bill would give them a lot of oversight over the next round of rules that DATCAP might write regarding livestock farm siting.
So is some of the thought behind this that it's taking away local government's power to push back when they don't want a large factory farm located in their area?
So at least the local government groups who talked about this, the Towns Association, for example, they are on board with it because they say what they have to do in these situations is there are state standards. If we adopt the state standards, then we have to go through this hearing process and decide whether a big livestock farm meets the standards. But there's still state standards. So this takes it out of the town's hands and just moves it to the state instead. So they, at least, there are some people who say, yeah, this is an assault on local control, but an organization that represents local control is okay with it.
Because they're like, we have to comply with the state anyway, so it might as well just go directly to the state and we don't have to deal with it.
Correct. Yeah. Ah,
got it.
But, you know, you talk about running out of time and the end of session. There was a moment where one of the legislators on the panel, a Democrat, was asking the attorney for the town association, like, hey, you guys, like, been working on this for a while? Because I just saw it like 2 days ago. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the attorney was like, look, I get where you're coming from and I understand your perspective, but I feel like it's all I've been doing for the last 3 months. So that's how these things go. It's like they are negotiating this stuff in private. And then at the end of session, poof, this giant bill that would make big changes is unveiled. It's given a joint hearing before the Senate and Assembly Agriculture Committees. And, you know, I expect it's probably going to be on the floor sometime next week.
Do we have any sense if there's opposition to this from the governor or from other folks out there? I mean, you mentioned some have argued that it's an assault on local control, that issue. I imagine there are some folks who were worried about the oversight panel having agricultural influence as opposed to, environmental concerns and that sort of thing. I guess just generally, real quick, as we're running out of time, is there any pushback to this?
Yes, that was one of the things that Democrats on these committees brought up, is that, you know, it seems like other people might be crowded out of this decision and that this whole effort is geared toward this handful of larger farms and maybe ignoring all the thousands of other farms that aren't as big. But yeah, they did bring up the membership of the board. I will say that the Evers administration, the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, officially took no stand on the bill. It's like an Aaron Burr type situation where they just, you know, talk less, smile more.
See, that went over my head because I have not seen,
world's with me.
Not yeah. seen the play. Yeah.
Actually, they just took an it for information only stand. I don't mean to compare them to Aaron Burr, known murderer.
Agencies often do that legislative process. It's very not common. Uncommon.
I'm sorry.
Known murderer. He's just known dual victor.
I mean,
what's the difference in this instance?
You know, Thomas Jefferson pursued him pretty aggressively after that happened, from what I could tell.
For murder charges?
Oh, man, it's like another podcast. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I would like Lin-Manuel should write another musical about Thomas Jefferson chasing Aaron Burr across the country.
A spinoff musical.
It's pretty interesting.
I'd see it.
Okay. DATCAP. They had a few issues with this, though. They're saying, one, you're putting a bunch of responsibilities on us. You're not giving us more staff. And by the way, they mentioned agriculture is not even like the biggest thing we do. Which is kind of interesting, too.
It's the first thing in our name, but really do more consumer protection work.
Consumer protection, food safety. Those are kind of their bigger departments, apparently. Mm-hmm. Another thing that they said is because they have so many more requirements put on them in the regular rulemaking process, like churning out rules for them requires a lot more now because of stuff that the legislature has passed. And they're saying now you're going to give this new board veto power over what we do, basically. I don't know if we can handle this.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
We better move on. I'm running out of time.
All All right, so moving on, what else do we have?
Well, how about the stuff, all the stuff that you covered this week, Laurel, the crime week?
I mean, crime and criminal justice.
It just seemed like a lot. There are all these tough on crime bills, the Lincoln Hills stuff. There's dueling. I don't mean to make these puns, but there are these.
not talking about Aaron Burr
here. We're talking about two competing proposals that have to do with how the state processes sexual assault kits. Laurel.
Yeah. Sean's holding his head.
Actually rubbing my temples right. a bit.
Ugh. So which one do you want me to start with, I guess?
Just take us on this journey.
Take me on the journey. Okay. Well, let's talk about the crime bills really quick first. So this is a Republican package of bills to increase criminal penalties in Wisconsin. They do a variety of things. One thing would take repeat offenders, people who commit crimes when they're on probation, for example. It would send them, under the proposal, it would send them back to a panel that would potentially revoke their probation, send them back to jail. Another would lift some of the things that allow people to be eligible for early release right now, things like advanced age or a medical condition. Another one would increase the number of things that a juvenile offender can be incarcerated for in Wisconsin. So sort of the overarching thing that supporters are pointing to is this cracks down on crime. It makes communities safer, while opponents are saying Wisconsin's prisons are already really overcrowded and we shouldn't be doing things to contribute to the prison population.
And that passed the assembly this week.
Yeah, I was going to say the news this week is that it passed the assembly.
Yep, it's through the assembly, so now we're just waiting to see what happens to those in the Senate.
And mostly a party line vote here, Republicans for, Democrats against, but a couple Republicans split with their colleagues, right?
Yeah, so notably this is a lawmaker that was pretty vocal about these proposals in committee, Representative Michael Schrah, who's talked a lot about the prison population in Wisconsin and criminal justice reform, spoke about the fact that these proposals are linked to actually building new prisons in the state, and that has a pretty hefty price tag, obviously, building new correctional institutions. And he said, you know, where's that money going to come from?
And because they didn't include a bill for building a new prison as part of this package.
Right.
And they have talked about that in the past, in last session, I believe.
Right.
Okay.
And speaking of building new prisons, how about prisons for young offenders?
Good transition.
Thank you.
So the big news this week with juvenile justice in Wisconsin is that the big juvenile justice overhaul that's creating these new regional facilities to replace Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake went before the Joint Finance Committee, which is something that proponents of this change have been pushing for a really long time. They've been concerned that this funding hasn't been allocated before now in JFC. What JFC actually chose to do, though, was to only fund the construction of 4 of the 6 youth prisons that are supposed to take the place of Lincoln Hills. So definitely a step forward on, you know, implementing that bipartisan bill that passed in 2018, I think, but not meeting the full requirements of the bill.
That reform bill set a deadline for closing Lincoln Hills, and it sounds like we're not going to get it.
Yeah, so Kevin Carr, who's the Department of Corrections Secretary, says that lawmakers choosing not to fund 2 of the 6 prisons means that the state's probably not going to meet that July 2021 deadline. And that's kind of interesting because it was actually a January 2021 deadline. It's already been pushed 6 months once. Now it seems like it's unlikely that that's not going to happen. Republican lawmakers pointed to the locations of those 2 facilities as a reason that they didn't want to move forward with funding them. There was some pushback on the location of those 2. One's in Milwaukee County, one's in Outagamie County.
And those are the two that didn't make the cut were the ones that would be state-run facilities,
right?
Whereas the ones that are county-run facilities were the ones that did get funded.
Yeah, so the state-run facilities are for the more serious offenders, and the county-run facilities are for the lower-level juvenile offenders. Those are going to be in Dane, Brown, Milwaukee, and Racine counties.
You had one more thing to talk about in the crime world.
Whew, holy moly, I do.
Yeah. Keep going, Laurel. Keep going. You got this.
We could do like a tag team here thing on this one. You want?
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
So this is that bill that would set like state guidelines for the processing of rape kits in the future, right? We're going to prevent, the idea was that it would prevent a future backlog like the state has recently experienced and has since cleared. And this is a bill that was one of those rare bipartisan bills where you had Republican and Democratic lawmakers stand up at a press conference, introduce it along with Attorney General Josh Call, a Democrat. And it just has been going nowhere. It'd been sitting in this assembly committee of Representative Sanfilippo, and we weren't quite sure what was going to happen with it, whether it was going to get a hearing or not. Turns out Representative Sanfilippo had other ideas on what this bill should look like. So not only does it, his bill include the timelines for processing these kits, it includes a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, here, I'm ready to Here's tag back in. I like went to my corner and I got like my towel and my water bottle.
I said baton. That is a race. It is not a wrestling match. Come on. Well,
maybe plus, I think you're thinking boxing as opposed to wrestling.
It's all right. We're public radio. We're just mixing all the sports. I don't know.
Hey, we have a sports reporter, okay? Don't give me this. Public radio doesn't do sports business.
That's a very good point. All right. Okay. So the two provisions that are in this bill now that weren't in the bipartisan bill, one has to do with immigration. So individuals that are in the country illegally that are charged with sexual assault would have to be reported to federal immigration officials. That's one new thing. The second new thing is that victims of sexual assault would be eligible to enter the state's private school voucher program, regardless of any previous eligibility block that they may have had before the sexual assault took place. So really this is...
Those two sound less bipartisan to me, just knowing what I know about people
those
around here.
Those two issues.
Yeah. Those issues, they sound a little less bipartisan.
Yeah, looping immigration and school vouchers into this plan really, I mean, Democrats have called it just a poison pill,
right?
Basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it did pass the state assembly, so we'll see if it gets taken up in the Senate.
All right, what else we got?
Okay, I think we can, while there are so many bills out there to choose from, let's wrap it up with one that was kind of making the go-round this week. Mm-hmm. And that was this plan that would extend bar hours during the Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee.
So yeah, we talked about this last week, but we're talking about this again. Why?
Why? Because, well, first of all, the actual bill came out. It's not just this thing getting circulated. And what's in the actual bill that's different from what we talked about? Well, okay, it's still got some similarities. The initial bill would have regulated wedding barns, and the initial bill would have had a 4 a.m. bar time from July 13th to July 17th. But when we talked about it last week, we were talking about this in a 14-county region in southeast Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. The latest version is statewide. So no matter where you are.
Just a little statewide bump for everybody else.
Imagine if you're in Superior. If you're in Superior, you're a bar in Superior, and you know this Democratic National Convention is coming up, you could say, hey, City of Superior, I would like to stay open until 4 a.m. during those days, because this plan would be a statewide bill. So that's
in
interesting.
In case somebody gets out late from the convention hall in Milwaukee, drives those hours. I'm trying to figure out how long the drive is from Milwaukee to Superior and how early they'd have to leave the convention hall to be able to get to said bar in Superior for the 4 a.m. bar time.
Or maybe people would just drink until 4 a.m. without any connection to the convention. So I'll say that... this really wasn't the focus of the hearing. It got a little discussion, but they were not talking a lot about that. There was a representative from the Tavern League said, you know, the last place that people want to, bar owners want to be is at their bar at 4 a.m. I don't think that a lot of people are going to take advantage of this outside of the region very close to the convention. So they could. That's not to say that they will. And the other thing that got all this attention at the hearing was this proposal to regulate wedding barns. Because that really gets like tavern owners and wedding barn owners very angry. I mean, this is one of those issues. And they pulled that out of the bill. So the bill is not a totally clean bill right now. It still does include some other stuff. There were about closing hours for breweries, for example. But I guess the most contentious stuff, the stuff about wedding barns, is now gone. So we'll see where that goes. Time's running out on that one.
So that now, has it passed committee now?
It passed committee. It passed committee without the wedding barn piece. And it's going to be on the assembly floor this week for a vote. The Senate has not really said where they're going to go on this. There's no Senate co-author of this bill. So we'll see. You know, they're going to meet. The Senate has said it's going to meet once in March. And so they would have a time to address this then.
Well, I know I said we were nonstop, but we have to stop this podcast at some point.
We're just going to keep podcasting, and we're stopping recording, but all week.
Yep, we're just going to be here.
John, Laurel, and Sean are going through all the bills.
What would Alexander Hamilton do?
He would probably go through all the bills.
He would.
Yeah, yeah. He'd write about all of them, make the rest of us feel lazy.
W-W-A-H-D.
Yep.
Well, Sean Johnson is WBR's Capital BR Chief.
Laurel White is not throwing away her shot.
Is that a Hamilton reference?
It's so good.
It is. Yeah. She's also WBR's Capital reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
On fighting in the meantime. Non-stop. Don't throw away your shot to get the best Wisconsin government and politics focused podcast content available. Subscribe to the WPR Politics Podcast on Apple Podcasts, and you'll get new episodes delivered to you almost every single week. While you're there, leave a rating or review of the show to help other people find it. It's also available on Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify, as well as many other podcast apps, and you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics.